the way that I see humility is three things. I think humility as a protection, a prevention, and a preservation. So humility protects us from thinking too low of ourselves because we ought to never forget that we're children of God. Mm. The second one is it's a prevention. So humility prevents you from thinking too high of yourself. And the last one is it's a preservation. It preserves us in the faithful hands of Jesus.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Ann Wilson.
And I'm Dave Wilson, and you can find us at familylifetoday.com. This is Family Life Today. All right, you ready to dig back into the hidden piece?
Yes.
Yeah, Joel is a deep thinker, and he's wise.
Really wise.
Yeah.
Joel Mutamali. And we're going to talk about humility, and that might be something you're like, oh, I don't really need this. Can I just say we all need this?
You need this. We all need this. So let's go.
I pulled up Genesis 3 just to look at that conversation.
Yeah.
And the serpent says to Eve, did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden?
Right.
The woman said to the serpent, we may eat from the trees in the garden, but God did say you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden and you must not touch it or you will die. And the serpent says, you will certainly not die, he said to the woman, for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Mm. So take us there.
Yeah.
Explain that.
So one of the questions always is, why in the world is this tree even in the middle in the first place?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So
Because the tree of life is there as well.
That's right. Okay, so you guys are taking me to all kinds of fun places. I love this. There's a great Old Testament scholar. His name is Gordon Wenham. And so I'm kind of pulling from Wenham's kind of research that the issue of the tree of knowledge, in my view, is it wasn't intended to be a never, it was a not yet. And the thing is that Adam and Eve were going to grow in knowledge. They were going to grow in wisdom underneath the supervision and the care and the shadow of Yahweh.
Interesting.
Of God who was going to walk. Because this
He's going to grow them.
Yes. Okay. So it's like my kids. We just talked about this with House of David. And House of David has some scenes in it that I think my teenage kids love. Actually, I don't think, I know. Like my boys, Liam, Levi, and Luke, man, they love the scene of the Amalekite king. And they're like, this feels like Lord of the Rings, Dad. Like, I love this, you know?
It's true.
Hey, my five-year-old, Emmy, she saw that Amalekite king and she said, peace, I'm out.
Oh, he's creepy and
right,
scary.
Right, yeah. She's like, there's wisdom. There's wisdom in the process where we can kind of look and say, oh, here's knowledge. That knowledge of how it is received and learned matters. Mm. It's appropriate in this season for Liam, Levi, and Luke. This isn't good for Emmy right now. So we make a decision to remove her from that. You know, we can watch something else and we'll watch a different time.
But later.
Yeah. Later when you grow, when you are, able to receive it.
Yeah.
So notice what the serpent's like, no, you don't need to wait. Mm. You can get it all. And I actually think they're overwhelmed with it because they haven't learned underneath the guidance of the Lord. And the other interesting thing about the tree is, and you pointed it out, Anne, is it's in the middle. But what's fascinating is the text also says the tree of life is in the middle.
Right.
So which one is at the center? Hmm. They both are at the center. Yeah. It's ambiguous. And I actually think this is a philosophical question that you and I are presented with today. And this is also a question of humility. The question is, what do you choose? Do you choose personal knowledge that you can own for your own gratitude, your own selfish ambition and vain conceit, or do you choose life with God?
Yes.
Whew. This is what we're being presented day in and day
every
out.
Every second decision. Of every day.
Right? And humility is the path that reminds us, I need God. Mm. And guess what? When I'm with God, I'm going to get the knowledge that I need.
And it may not be right now.
And it may not be, but that's for our good.
Yeah.
That's for our benefit. And the serpent suggests, you don't have to wait. It's sin is a series of shortcuts that undermine our humanity.
What would have happened had they eaten from the tree of life?
So there's a lot of debate, a lot of conversation, Old Testament scholars about what that was. But what we know for a fact, what Genesis 3 tells us, the tree of life, if they ate after they ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and sin enters into the world, the tree of life would have left them, now think about this conceptually, in an eternal state of separation from God. What's another word for that? Hell.
Yes. Yeah. I just taught my grandkids this whole concept.
Yeah.
Because of the cherubim guarding the Garden of Eden. I used to think that's so mean that he wouldn't let them back in. No, they were protecting them from eating from the tree of life.
It's a momentary punishment because there is a long-term promise that's on the way. And this is back to Genesis 3, that the serpent, in fact, will strike at the heel of the seed of the woman.
Yeah.
But the heel is going to crush the serpent. And it's actually out of great love that the Lord says, this is too much of a risk.
Mm-hmm.
That his children would live in an eternal state of separation. And now, fascinating about Eden is Eden leaves as a garden, but in Revelation, it returns no longer as a garden, but as a garden city. This isn't about removing it and starting something. It's actually about the renewal and restoration of heaven and earth. And we see that with the Garden of Eden, which is a garden city.
But every day we're faced with that decision.
100%.
Will I choose life with God? Or will I choose my own advancement and pleasure?
That's right.
And in some ways, you tell me, will I choose pride or humility?
Yes,
100%. And yeah. I think I would say like that the pride and humility is the fuel that makes that decision. John Stott has this incredible quote. I paraphrase it and kind of changed it up. So the way that I say it is that if honesty and humility go together, then pride and insanity go together as well.
Wow. Mm.
Pride is like, it doesn't matter what the cost is. I want what I want when I want it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So like the way that I see humility is three things. I think humility as a protection, a prevention, and a preservation. So humility protects us from thinking too low of ourselves because we ought to never forget that we're children of God, made in his likeness and image.
So to say like, I'm nothing, I'm nobody, that's going against what God's saying.
My daughter, Emmy, came to me the other day and she's got this curly hair, like beautiful curly hair. She came into my office the other day and she goes, Daddy, I'm not pretty. I'm not pretty. I don't have straight hair like all the other girls. You know what's so interesting is one, my heart hurt, but second, I was offended. I was offended on behalf of my daughter. She can't say that. Like, that's not the worldview she should have about herself.
Yeah.
I want us to think about our Heavenly Father. How does he think about us? I think there's like a holy offense that he kind of has. Like, wait a minute, no.
Yeah.
I've made them in my likeness and my image. They're my royal children. So to say that you're nothing is actually to say something in a way about God himself.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't want to do that.
That's not humility to say I'm nothing.
No, well, that's self-deprecation.
Think about the power of our words of that, even in a marriage, when we belittle and nag and see all the negative in our spouse. Probably makes God sad. Like, that's not how I see him. I've put you in his life to lift him up and to remind him of what I see in him.
Yeah.
And yet the enemy just clouds our vision.
She's just talking about our marriage. That's all she's doing. Yeah, for 20 years. And she just wrote a book on that. How to speak life to your husband when all you want to do is yell at him. And
there was
your wife needs that, right?
Yeah. I'm kidding, Brett.
I mean, there was a time where that's what happened in our marriage. Yeah. It was more critique, and I want you to be this, and I thought you were this.
Yeah.
Rather than, oh my goodness, look at the greatness in my spouse. Now, there's things that we got to speak truth about.
Yeah.
But there's also greatness that God, they're image bearers.
But I love the illustration with your daughter. Because as a father, you are offended. Like, what in the world? We do that with our kids. Like, are you kidding me?
Well, instantly I thought like, who said that to you?
Yeah.
You didn't just come out like, what little knucklehead kid said that to you?
Yeah.
We're on their parents right now.
What did you say back?
Yeah, I said, oh, baby girl, no. You're not ugly. And I'd say, look at how beautiful these curls are. And it's not overboard. It's just honest. Like, I love the way that your hair curls. And I love that the shape it takes when it bounces on your shoulders. And did you know that there's not many people that actually have this kind of hair? How special that God would give you this gift. And also, did you know that your Nanama, which is the Telugu word for grandmother, has this exact same hair? And don't you love Nana? And she goes, yeah, I love Nana. Like, yeah. Like, well, baby, like you have the same, like, isn't that so amazing that God, and I'm actually, it was a friend, Dr. Paul Tripp. I don't know if you guys know who Paul Tripp is. I did an event with Paul years and years and years ago. And I was like, Paul, I'm trying to figure out how to like, just communicate like the goodness of God to my kids. They're much younger. Paul gave me this advice. I'll never forget. And I implemented in everything that I do now with my kids. He goes, Joel, what do your kids like to do? At that time, Liam loved playing basketball. So I said, Liam loves playing basketball. He goes, the next time you play ball with him, just stop and go, Liam, isn't it wild how God would give us the creative thought to even think to take a ball and put it through. And think about this, like this circular thing, like how our hand can bend and just go through the motion, like, and connect the everyday thing that we just assume and point it to the goodness of who God is and his creative brilliance. Mm. It's like, that's the thing I want to do with my daughter. That's the thing I want to just connect, is like, babe, this isn't random. This isn't some like holy roll of the dice. You just happen to have curly hair. There's a God who's intentional about this. And in some way, it's actually a reflection of your grandmother. And it's a reflection of me. And it's a reflection of your mom, you know?
Because the world is trying to shape her into their image 100%. And their own story of 100%. Who she is. So as parents, to remind them, this is who you are. This is who God says you are. This is the legacy that's been passed to you. It's the opposite of what you're talking about in terms of the humility. It's being able to see who you are in God's eyes.
Yeah, it's a protection. The second one is it's a prevention. So humility prevents you from thinking too high of yourself. Because there's a counterbalance here, right? And the way that I would say it is like, at times we can view our relationships as if we're playing chess and the other people in our life are all pawns. And we're happy to sacrifice them whenever we want. Mm-hmm. And so what humility does is it's actually a prevention. It prevents us from thinking too high of ourselves. Because when we look at other people, we're forced to see other image bearers of God, other children of God.
Yeah.
And the last one is it's a preservation. It preserves us in the faithful hands of Jesus. This is the whole peace and the resolve to anxiety. It's not that you're never going to feel anxiety. And it's not that there's not going to be anxious moments in your life. That's just not true. But what it does mean is that in those moments, you're reminded of the faithful hand-pierced hands of Jesus that hold you and preserve you and keep you in and through it. And I think that's really the power of humility and why I think that this isn't a message that is one that we like checklist and move on from. I really truly believe that humility is the soil of the Christian life. Mm. It's the place from which we live from. And it goes back to that origin story. And the more that we can be rooted in the humility of Christ, I think the more beautiful we'll see our own life and the life of others, and we'll create beauty in the world as well.
I mean, how do you balance the attribute of humility with confidence?
Yeah.
Like, you want to be confident.
Yeah.
I was a college quarterback, so there's no way I want to walk in a huddle and exude humility.
Yeah.
Although I do, but I really want to exude, I got this, we got this. I mean, that's my role. I got to inspire 10 other guys to believe. And I remember my mentor said, you call play. They got a sense you believe this play. And there were times, literally, I'd say to my offensive lineman in the game, guys, you give me one extra second touchdown, guarantee it. Give me one. And they'd look at me like, you got it.
So when you said you, did you mean one person? Are you only looking at the center? Or are you looking at the offensive tackle? What do you mean by you?
I'm looking at the whole huddle.
So you're actually saying second person plural. This is fascinating. I'm such a nerd.
Right,
you're
actually
saying y'all.
Yes. That's how,
just so you know, Paul's a good Southern
y'all.
Boy.
Yeah.
Because Paul, often when he says you in his epistles, he's actually saying y'all.
Yeah.
He's saying you all. Mm. So you actually answered the question, and I think it's so brilliant, and I wish I could go back and do an edition of this because I want to quote you. I want to add it in a chapter in this book, but there's a chapter where I talk about hidden pride. Mm. And the difference between pride and confidence is actually the exchange of the I versus the we.
Mm.
Okay. So Paul, when he's talking about the fruit of the Spirit, this is so devastating. I think this is the one thing, as I was researching, doing all my theology study for the hidden piece, this destroyed me because it exposed my own darkness, my own heart. Okay. Mm. So I just say that from a place of like, whew, this like really messed with me. I didn't want to write it because I was like, this is really hard. Paul talks about the fruit of the Spirit, and we've talked about it, Galatians chapter 5, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness. So I want to give a little example. Imagine your favorite fruit, whatever your favorite fruit is. Okay. And so I'm going to pick mango for my illustration. So you got this mango and it's just like, oh, it's amazing. And it looks so great from the outside. And you start digging into this mango. It's like so good. And then you get to the very center and you're like, oh, it's rotten. Mm. So what does that mean for the rest of the mango that I just ate? In some way, it was contaminated by that thing that was run on the inside. And hidden pride is just like that. And what's so devastating about hidden pride is that hidden pride often presents itself as the fruit of the Spirit.
Mm.
This is devastating because here we are Christians. Here we are as moms and dads and people in our family, sons and daughters. Like, well, no, I'm love, joy. I'm doing all those things. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness. And you are doing it, but the aim and the ambition of the why that you're doing it is corrupt on the inside. So the question we're asking is that I versus the we. The I is you're actually leveraging the fruit of the Spirit in a way for selfish ambition. I'm happy to love. I'm happy to have joy. I'm happy to have all of that as long as I get what I want. Mm. There's a contingency clause that's built into it. And the way that Paul talks about the fruit of the Spirit is always outward and upward. It's always outward for the edification of God's people and upward for the glorification of God. But hidden pride is always inward and inward. Wow. It's always for my own edification.
Yeah.
And it's actually always for my own glorification. Mm. And so in the same way that you go into that huddle and you're talking to these guys and you're saying, there's a part of confidence, which is saying, no, I have a part to play. And there's a part of it that goes, and all of you need to play your part too.
Right.
Oh, this whole thing falls apart.
Right.
Center, you don't snap it.
Right tackle,
you don't block, like the block scheme goes out the side. Like we all have to.
You can't do it apart from one another.
That's 100%. And this is what Paul is trying to teach us throughout the scriptures. And this is why humility is so important for us, because it helps us to be honest about the areas that we can be confident. Like, I've hit that throw 1,000 times in practice. I can hit that throw today. I just need all of y'all to do your job. Mm. We can do this thing.
Yeah.
You see,
versus
we.
Yeah.
The question is, you know, sometimes you think confidence is pride. After I became a follower of Christ in college, so I went from playing football as a non-believer to a believer, I realized my confidence really was Christ in me.
Right.
The gifts I had,
right.
The scholarship, everything was a gift. So it wasn't prideful anymore. It was like, it was humble.
It used to be.
It used to be, totally.
Because it was all about you.
But I think sometimes even as a husband or a dad, you know, we're called to lead the huddle that we're leading in our home.
Yeah.
And we want to do that with strength. You know, and you talk about finding true strength. And I think sometimes guys think true strength isn't humble. It's prideful. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And you're saying, no, it's actually... The foundation's a humble thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a confidence that's rooted in honesty. And so it's rooted in truth. And it has, like I said, an aim and ambition. And the aim and ambition is in self-glorification. It's the good of all people, which is like the essence of the gospel.
Yes.
The gospel is good news, not just for me, myself, and I. It's the good news for all of us.
Why did this whole concept, you said it like broke you. Mm. Like it was it convicting?
100%. So I write about it in the book. Basically, around the time that I'm like researching this, I'm like, wait a minute, I have this idea. There's a thing that happened where I had an opportunity to be like this interim pastor for a church. I thought in my view, I'm like, man, I do all the checklists. I don't even want to be a senior pastor ever. Like that's not my jam. But interim, come in, preach on a weekly basis. Like I can crush that. Like I feel real confident with that. And it kind of fell apart. Everything looked great. It looked like I was going to do it. I even had the sermon series planned as they were doing their search committee for their new person. I just got like this awkward call of like, you know, it's like a breakup with a girlfriend in high school. Yeah. It's not you, it's me. You know, that's what it kind of felt like. I was like, okay. And at the moment I was like, I'm fine. This is actually good. I've got writing projects. So this is going to give me time.
So the call was what?
Was, we're not going with you. Mm. Like, you're not the interim guy. Like, you know? And so that's where it felt like a breakup.
It was the breakup.
That was like the breakup idea.
I figured,
you know?
But I wanted to make sure.
But in that moment, I'm like, I'm fine. This is all good.
Fine.
So, so now months, like a month or so passes, and I see online somebody posted. They basically are like, man, I'm so excited. I'm the new interim for this church. This is hidden pride. In my heart, I go, like, there's nothing special about that dude. Like, I'm like, I mean, he's good, but like,
I'm way better.
You know, I'm like, and I thought everything was fine. And then I have a friend who is a very close friend of mine, knows me very well. And he called me. He said, hey man, I just saw the message. How are you doing? Fine. No. How are you actually doing? I was like, man, and I just went. I just like as honest as I possibly could. And the things that I was saying in my heart at the time were like, well, no, that's the right fit for that person at the right time. No, God had something better for me. No, this is actually going to work out because I've got more. You see, like I had used these like the virtues. I'd used the fruit of the Spirit in a way, but really internally in my own heart, it was all about my own ambition. It was all about my own vain conceit. It was about like how I could glorify myself. Mm. And the Lord just exposed it. It was like, nah, that's hidden pride. Like, you know, and you're presenting it as everything's fine. Everything's good.
How do we notice the hidden pride in ourselves?
The scriptures often say that in the Psalms, like the heart is deceptive amongst all things. And in the Hebrew, the heart, lev, it has in mind, we think of like the heart and mind separated. The mind is the place of intellect. The heart is the place of emotion. The Hebrews understood the heart is the place of the seat of both volition and emotion. That's like the center of it. This is why it's in the heart is so deceitful. So one is like, sometimes you can't see your own blind spots.
Right.
That's why it's call a blind spot.
Yeah.
So you need to have some people in your life that love Jesus more than they love you. And so I've got a group of friends, actually in the back, the dedication acknowledgments is to a group of guys. They're called, you guys are going to laugh. It's called To the Chicago Boys, B-O-Y-Z. It's our group chat. We're actually in fantasy football season right now. But these guys, let me tell you, they're so unimpressed with me. We grew up together. We came up together. There, a bunch of them are all Indians, parents, all immigrants. Like, we literally came up together, and they are so unimpressed with me. When this book came out, they started to call me like the next day, like, man, you okay? I was like, why? He's like, who in the right mind would buy a book from you? So unimpressed. But they're it's so good for my soul.
Yeah.
It is so good for me to have some people that are so unimpressed with me, but know me, like really know me in the
and
way that I'm wired and love me. And they love Jesus more than they love me. And so they're not dependent on me for anything. I can't do anything for them. They're not connected to me vocationally. They're not connected. There's no platform that I can give them. Like, no, there's a pure kind of a purity to
your boys.
They're just my boys, you know? And same for them. Like, I'm that same thing for them. And so sometimes you need some other people to look and to call out that thing. The second thing is, I think we need to make prayer a regular part of the process where we ask the Holy Spirit to illuminate the areas of our heart
Search
that we're not aware
and know
of.
Me.
Oh, yeah. Create in me a new heart, oh Lord. And so that's the second thing. And the third thing is, if you're married, you know, your spouse is like the best person. Mm-hmm. Who else can know you than your counterpart who in love, you know, it's kind of like that bank, like, man, they have invested so much positive that when they do say that thing that is a bit of like, whoo, that was tough. That emotional bank of positivity and encouragement so can cover the hit. That criticism or that critique that comes in that's honest and true.
Yeah.
That we need to hear.
And that ratio is important.
Yes.
I think
so. The positive,
too.
The deposits. And then, so have you had any where your wife has said, hey,
any?
Do we have recently? Anything come to mind?
100%. 100% I've had. The way that I talk to my boys sometimes can be very like coach, militant. I didn't have a dad growing up that cared much about sports, didn't teach me that kind of stuff. I still joke to this day, I just need a couple more inches. I could have gone at least D1 basketball. I could have gone hoops, you know?
Yeah, I read some about you. You had a, you know, pretty big crossover behind the back.
I was known for my crossover. Now I'm just a spot up 3-point shooter. Tuesday nights, the guys that come
That's
in
me.
Press, they know. But for me, it was like, hey, babe, sometimes you talk to the boys more like you're their coach, like a sergeant in boot camp, than like you're just their dad. I'm like, what do you mean? No, they love it. They love when I'm,
you know? Love it. They love it.
And so we're doing this thing now where I'm trying to take one of the kids out in the morning. Just having four kids is hard, you know? So just one. And so we rotate every week on Tuesday. I take a different kid out to breakfast before I go into the office, before they go to school. Took my son out and we just kind of processed that. And I was like, hey, man, how do you feel? And he's like, and my son was like, Dad, you know, I really love it when like you coach me up. But sometimes like I got my coach. I don't need you to coach me up.
Mm.
And I was like, whew, get it.
Good word.
That's a good word.
Yeah,
you know?
It is a good word.
And so just my wife has this ability to see in me. And for me, it's like a place of actual, like, I so desperately wanted that growing up. I just never had it. I never had anybody teach me how to shoot a jump shot. I had to literally watch Michael Jordan shoot a jump shot. Yeah. Like, if you watch like anything about my game, it's like very much 90s Bulls, you know, Steve Kerr, BJ Armstrong. I mean, I watch those guys hoop, Tony Kukoc.
Yeah.
But the problem is that place of like honesty and goodness that you are coming from can also become a place of hurt to your children because they don't need that.
Yeah.
Like they're already getting a healthy dose of it. Yeah. And so I just needed Britt to like be like, hey. And then the other one, honestly, the big one, you guys, is like to apologize. Apologize when I mess up. And I hate that.
I do too.
Especially with my kids.
I can do it with my kids. It's with Dave. It's the hardest.
Oh, man.
I feel like God just continues to reveal this pridefulness.
Mm-hmm.
He's showing me now, but I had been doing it for years, thinking I'm so much better at relationship stuff with us than Dave. He's so out of touch with feelings and emotions. Pure pride. And when I put that mirror up, and that's the beauty of God's word.
Yeah.
Okay, did you learn something today?
I learn something every day with Joel.
I know, me too.
Yeah,
about
I know
all
you
different
do.
Topics.
Yeah.
I know.
Here's his book, The Hidden Peace. You can get it at familylifetoday.com. Click on the link in the show notes, and you can keep experiencing what you just experienced today for the rest of the month. There's a lot in here.
Yeah, there is.
Hey, thanks for listening to Family Life Today, and it is Christmas season, and there's nothing better.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
Family Life Today is a donor-supported ministry of Family Life, a crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.